Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Connor.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What's up, guys?
Jonah Carey, we saw the Cubs offense just kind of go dormant again. Is this an issue or not?
Brian certainly has the skill to turn things around. I mean, you look at what happened early in the season. It was Rizzo who was slumping. So the thought is, if you have the horses and you should be able to get it done, and you look at this team, this is still a strong ball club, and you go through rough patches over the course of the season. You know, these things happen. So it's tough because obviously doing it against the Brewers, it exacerbates the situation. But you look at all the underlying metrics in the Cubs, you know, it seems to be the best team in the division. They're just having some problems, which happens over the course of the season.
Intelligent, in-depth sports talk for your workday.
What they are is they're out there, they're talking, they're yapping, and they're trying their best.
Bernstein and McKnight, middays on the Score.
Here we are, Bernstein and McKnight. The Cubs On Deck Luncheon Series begins today, presented by AZEK Building Products, Xfinity, and the Budweiser Brick House Tavern, located at 3647 North Clark Street, outside Wrigley Field. We are broadcasting from the Hyundai Studios, home of the Tucson and Santa Fe Sport, and Vincent Goodwill is going to join us at 10. We got a lot of stuff for the midday midway at 11, and then we will have our baseball guests at noon with some surprises along the way as well. 312-644-6767 is the number at WSCR The Score. You email us at Bernstein and McKnight at 670thescore.com. That's where you listen to us live. Streaming at 670thescore.com. Texting at 67011. You text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein underscore MCK. That guy is at C1 McKnight. I am at Dan underscore Bernstein. And you can also like the Facebook page at the 670 The Score Facebook page. You can join the conversation, and you can also watch our video feed at Facebook Live or at watch670thescore.com. It's actually here.
One camera today, huh?
I think we've got the...
What is this? What is Brian Gerch doing? Just one. Oh, two cameras. Very quickly defending his job is Brian Gerch over here.
There it is.
My apologies,
sorry.
Sir.
Yeah, take one, take two. Sorry. Sorry.
No, I love it.
Yeah,
this is fantastic.
Some complicated direction you got going over there.
Jeez.
Otto Preminger. Please. Wow.
Man, I
Cecil
B. DeMille over there. I leaned in on Kirch once for the first time in 3 months.
I
deserved it.
I believe if he's going to be that kind of video director, he must wear jodhpurs and have a little crop.
Like absolutely.
A riding crop, a beret, and full jodhpurs.
As long as he teaches us the dance number, like at the end of Blazing Saddles, you know, with the kind of aplomb that we've seen at the end of that movie, I'm fine with that.
Okay. That's all very good then.
By the way, the Facebook conversation right now is almost exclusively, I checked real quick, almost exclusively about how hard the course was at Shinnecock with the U.S. Open. And by the way, it was really difficult. And I know that you're all about the U.S. Open being hard, but that was for 2 days preposterous. I know there's more propers. Please continue.
No, it was. It's supposed to be, and it's okay. It's one tournament a year that pushes the envelope. One.
But they. All right, we'll get to it.
It's one. I understand it. I like to see them. I look like duffers.
No.
Okay. I know they're screaming and all up, pitching a fit, and Phil's doing what he does. It's one tournament. You know it's coming. Steel your nerves for it and get ready for it. Where was I? The producers.
Yeah, that's
right here on site. Jay Zawoski.
Here comes a run. Whoops. Left, right. The shot.
You gotta be bleeping me.
That's fantastic.
That's channeling his inner hawk.
I watched a lot more of the World Cup this weekend than I thought I would.
I did not.
And it's very hard for me. I do this like every World Cup. I watch that like first weekend of football, and I garner some knowledge, but I have to remind myself to not talk about it really, because I don't know anything. I just watched some soccer, and now I think I know things, which puts me right smack dab in the middle of everybody who went with their buddy who actually likes soccer to a bar to watch soccer over the weekend. So now I've just got to lay back in the cut a little bit. I enjoyed watching some of the soccer. I liked watching a lot of the goals. Ronaldo and Messi and these guys, very good. Good soccer all the way around.
We should mention, too, that we have an engineer on site, too, and he's Tito the Challenge, a.k.a. Rich Wyatt. Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave him out. But back at the studios, we have Rick Camp.
There are three Danish going forward. This is Paulsen. The strike!
Is that Andres Cantor?
I believe
it
is.
Is that our guy?
I believe it is.
No.
That was actually... No? It's not. Because, yeah, Andres Cantor's
somebody
goal
doing
call,
Cantor's thing.
It's longer. He extends the goal, actual goal call much longer.
Yeah, this I think screaming a goal step, is kind I of think. A universal thing.
Okay. Fair enough. I just realized that Rick's job, at least for the proppers for the next month or so, got really easy. All you've got to do is rip goal calls from 1-0 games.
Boom!
They're all gonna be
goals to
That's awesome.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Yes, it
Boom
is.
Boom goes the dynamite.
There's a Ball State kid, right? Is the kid doing yes. doing college TV news or whatever it was? The yep. ball, man yes. passes the ball to the man and yes. boom goes the dynamite.
But everybody should be the cricket play-by-play guy for these. Every goal should be, holy heck!
Some Australian losing his mind.
He's usually in the back doing what he does, but he has moved up. He's actually visible, not for us, but for if were we in the studio, oh, we would I be see. Able to see the smiling visage of the executioner, Ray Diaz.
If a man's zipper breaks at church, what might he use to cover it up?
A child.
Wow.
Whoa!
A what?
A child!
The man gonna get us locked up.
Wait.
Not a good answer. Not a good answer.
Not a good answer.
Not a good answer.
Not a good answer. I met a baby.
Either
worse.
Then he tried to fix it. He said, I meant a baby.
That's worse. That's worse. That's worse.
Somebody's child. Person sounds better.
All right, I'm going to need this whiteboarded here. I think...
Clearly we're on Family Feud, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
It's Family Feud. What was the question?
I'm not sure.
If your zipper like breaks at church, what do you use to cover it?
If your zipper breaks oh, no. at church?
Oh, no.
What, like, if you're just
like
sitting
your fly.
In
the...
Says
you're, okay,
a child?
Okay, your fly is open in... And you're in the pews, or you're standing before the congregation?
I mean, I think at some point when you're using a child to cover it up, it might not matter where you are.
The joy of a multi-answer question is you can interpret it the way you'd like.
You've chosen a child to cover up the fact that you busted a zipper.
Well, especially because of the history of certain denominations, it would probably be... I mean, I know that the clergy at times has resorted to that. But
you took the fun out of a malaprop.
a child, a baby.
None of those answers are good answers.
Oh.
None of them.
How does
all of them
how exactly?
It
not a good answer.
Not a good answer.
Not a good,
not
answer.
A good answer.
But it was a good answer. But how does reference to an institutionalized pedophilia scandal take the fun out of something? Come on.
Whiteboard that for me,
this
Dan.
This segment brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma, get knowing. See, you watched soccer where I was. It was
I watched
golf.
A good deal of soccer. I was flipping back and forth between the golf and the soccer. I did not see a single goal live, by the way.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Not anyone. I watched a lot of soccer, no goals.
I didn't really see any of the soccer. I saw references to it on Twitter, and then I would see the highlight on Twitter, like when
the way to do it.
When Messi didn't score on the penalty kick, and the guy knocked it away. I also did see that, much like the famed Marshawn Lynch beast quake in Seattle, there was a seismic event in Mexico City. That due to that goal, the jumping up and down in Mexico City, set off two different sensors that are placed there to detect potential earthquakes. There was an earthquake because of it.
It was cool to watch. And apparently, Chicharito, you know, their striker for Mexico for they apparently wasn't even necessarily a lock to be a starter in this game. See, this is the kind of soccer knowledge that I should probably just put away because I've learned X number of things but have no context
but
with
you
which to give you any of these.
Unlike
things.
Cricket, you haven't actively tried to not learn about soccer.
No, that's very true. I find myself falling more and more in love with soccer every World Cup. And then it never grabs and holds. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the sport. There's probably something much more wrong with me that the sport hasn't grabbed and held. You know, my interest and my time, I suppose. But I do get into this thing every 4 years, and then it just kind of fades away after a month.
It's okay. You're kind of supposed to.
Yeah, I think that's how they want me to dive in.
I'm always here to pretend to like something. I have no problem with that. I will get into something.
Manufacturing interest.
I'm fighting against it or trying to step all over and say something sucks. I don't get anything out of that anymore. Like whether it's the Olympics, if you want to enjoy curling, you want to have curling on. You want to get into it and learn all of the argot and know who's doing what and the strategy because it goes away.
The Olympics, curling especially, some of the best background sports in the world.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I like to think every once in a while on this show, one of us will come up with a mind diamond.
Every now and again, sure, yes. Like an infinity stone.
Just something as a mind diamond.
Grown right here. Yes.
Was it me or does Jack Flaherty use the Jedi mind trick on people?
How so?
They don't get good swings.
No, they really don't.
It's not overwhelming stuff.
The slider's very good, though. Yeah. Usage of it last night wasn't necessarily the Flaherty I've seen in a couple of other starts. I think you're right about that. There's got to be a little deception. There's got to be a little shake or shimmy in that delivery, too.
Nobody looked comfortable.
Mm-mm.
Nobody looked in rhythm. Everybody seemed kind of in between. A lot of the swings. My barometer very often is Chris Bryant, just because Bryant is so metronomic in the way he can get through the zone. And when he's a little off and when he doesn't seem ready to fire or a tick late, even Rizzo in his B-hack just seemed like a little late on some of those. Like, God, you watch their reaction. You can tell if a guy thought it was his pitch or thought he was going to get on one and couldn't quite figure out why he didn't square it up.
Yeah, two things there I thought, too. As Flaherty got into a little bit of trouble, specifically early in that game, I thought he did a really nice job of calming himself down, or I suppose even Yadi Molina coming out to talk some, though the broadcast didn't show the conversation. They were stuck on a Chris Bryant ISO or something like that. I thought it was a pretty good job to get himself back into rhythm. Second thing would be this. I understand your usage of Chris Bryant as a barometer. I think it's a good one. But the fact of the matter is, despite his relative success through what has now been essentially a month of non-Chris Bryant baseball, call it a slump if you want, which I guess you could, but there's still production within this last month, your barometer and Chris's needs a little bit of calibration here. Mm-hmm. And that's a non-zero factor in the Cubs' production, not necessarily the results, because of the way they've pitched, specifically out of the bullpen over the last month or so, and the way that, you know, they've had some other games where they've gotten healthy in some runs, 11 runs here, a 13 run there, that kind of thing. But the barometer itself needs a little bit of recalibration, and finding that has been now a subject of many, many pieces, trying to find out what's up with Chris Bryant.
Yeah, I hope he's not in his head. I always thought that he it was impossible for him to get in his own head just because he's Chris Bryant. That he's just that some great athletes just never have that because they're not wired that way. But maybe this is his first time with a little bit of a cluttered mind. I've always admired that watching youth athletes. You know, the beauty of the uncluttered mind.
There's just not a lot in the way.
Maybe something's a little in the way.
Some guys are really good at zeroing things out, too. It's kind of the point and purpose of that 5 minutes of celebration, you know, that you've seen Joe Maddon's Cubs do, and a lot of teams do. Celebrate it for 5 minutes, get into it, enjoy it, live in the moment. Then it all goes away. You have to erase it all. And that's no different than the conversation athletes have had, baseball players specifically, for 100 years. But the actual the completion of that deletion, right? I mean, that's tough to do. That's actually really difficult to come to the park the next day having worn your 0 for 4 or felt those couple of bad, uncomfortable swings against Jack Flaherty. To clear that out is a difficult process and one that changes a little bit over time. You can't just apply the same stuff to the same injuries, the same issues, not actual physical injuries, the metaphorical ones. But you can't just keep the same process up. So that in and of itself is this little adjustment that the players have to make in their careers.
It's back to Shinnecock Hills and understanding your recalibrating your circumstances.
No, that's nonsense. That's a bunch of baloney. Because here's the thing. The U.S., they do the same thing every year. And it's not just that they set up an impossible course and then revel in the fact that they've set up an impossible course.
All right.
It's not just that.
Save your next thought, because this is something I can tell from your body language
that you feel
strongly about this.
I am. I'm very upset.
Let's have at it in just a moment. We got Vincent Goodwill coming up at the top of the hour. After Vincent, I've got a basketball experiment. I actually did a research project over the weekend. I'm not
really?
Kidding. I actually took several hours and did a research project about Bulls draft history just to see if we could look at it through a different prism. And I want to get into that after Vincent Goodwill. But now Connor has the floor when we return on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Brooks Koepka. Back-to-back U.S. Open championships for that powerful young man.
Congratulations to Koepka. Nice little run of 4 days. Way to keep it together.
Nice job. I myself
am going to try and keep it together here. I understand your point generally, and many, many, many people's point, that the U.S. Open is supposed to be a difficult tournament, that you want even par to win this thing, and that you're looking to have, you know, those scores, that kind of test of skill, all that jazz. Fine. But this is not the first time that the USGA has mounted a tournament at Shinnecock Hills. It's not the first time that they've overcorrected to try and make a course as brutal as possible. And really, when it comes down to it, maybe I'm wrong and I ought to be thanking the USGA for turning Phil Mickelson into the crying little child that he ended up being while putting a ball as it was moving on the green. That's a beautiful, tasty, delicious little appetizer leading up to Brooks Koepka out-putting Dustin Johnson on Sunday. But there's something predictable in the USGA setup of this course and the explanation of where they'd cut the pins. It's not just they knew winds were coming around on Friday and on Saturday. They knew how the course was going to play out, and yet they demanded that those pinhole placements be tucked right up next to the edges of greens into corners that were unreachable by anything other than God and his lightning. Like there's no possible way for them to have thought this out less. So you get a Sunday where you have this massive recorrection overcorrection.
They did think it out though.
Right, and this is what they planned to do. Right. So their overcorrection, their desire and need to break players and to have guys trundle off into the scoring tent and then run away from press afterward, like that's all premeditated. And they didn't choose. See, here's the flip side. It's because going into Sunday's round four, you cut things differently. You slowed down some greens. You had the moisture meters out there, all of them buried up to their neck and doing great work, as moisture meters can do. And you've got Tommy Fleetwood shooting the 663 in U.S. Open history. You've got Brooks Koepka putting together a masterful round. And I wonder how the conversation changes some if Dustin Johnson just putts a little bit better on Sunday.
All right, well, would you be more pleased if they just stuck to their guns instead of being responsive and admitting a mistake? Would you want them to double down and say, nope, this is the course, play it?
I am always a fan of the irrational double down. I mean, hell, if you've made the mistake, you lean into that thing, power through the curve, and drive on to victory.
You do it regularly.
Hell yes.
There's no such thing as a McKnight malaprop because he owns it.
That's right.
Yep.
You double down. Yep. It's the Gambino double down. It's what you do. Dustin Johnson hit 16 greens in regulation. Essentially, he lost 2.2 strokes via putting. He lost by 2 strokes. He had birdie putts on 3 and 6, pars at 17, 11, 14, and 17. All of them were missed putts. So to a certain point, that course Sunday, again, that was DJ's round on Sunday. Sunday's course wasn't the course. that anybody played the first 3 days.
Would you have preferred that they had played that course the first 3 days as well?
I think I would have. Yeah, okay. I think I would have.
And then you got the Pebble Beach Pro-Am.
No, I don't think it gets to that degree because you still have the winds that are going to change. I mean, I'll allow for those winds kicking up and drying things out. I'll allow for there are circumstances beyond a golf course's control. We've seen that at the British Open. We've seen that at St. Andrews. We've seen how winds specifically, when they're set up on courses that are a little bit like that, dry stuff out, greens turn to concrete, you're going to have that. But they chose to put those pins where they put those pins, Friday and specifically Saturday. Like those are the kind of things that a golf course, in my opinion, can use to fight back against the things they can't manage. Things like having fescue that's up to your hip. Things like having greens that are basically mowed the same ways as the fairways. I mean, these are things that a golf course can use to fight back against that which is out of their control, and I don't think they even cared to manage those things.
They decided to flex all of those things immediately. They just put it all out there rather than holding some of that in abeyance.
Now, again, if indeed the only way we get Phil Mickelson turning into a small child and running away from his own mistakes on a golf course is by all of the combined miscalculations of the USGA and those terrible wind conditions, then I will put that down as a win for all of humanity. Then fine, you've done it well, and I'll enjoy watching Phil Mickelson scurry along to that moving golf ball and hitting it back toward a hole like a 7-year-old Connor McKnight on the course that he just can't contain.
This segment brought to you by Indeed. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. An email here to Bernstein and McKnight at 670thescore.com. This is from Rudy. He says, I don't mind tough courses. I like that par can win a tournament, but this weekend went beyond that. If they remove that much skill from an event in which anyone can qualify and leave the top of the leaderboard to luck, I'm not much interested in watching. He says, as far as Phil, I just wish he wasn't so arrogantly smug and fake in his explanation. Just say this.
In just his explanation, yeah, huh? That's the only place he's arrogant and fake? Interesting.
Just say this. I think this course sucks. The USGA is stupid for doing this, and I wanted to go home. He said, that I would have agreed with.
That would have, really, of all the things that gets me back toward Phil's side, that would have been great. I would have actually truly appreciated that. Not some ham-fisted, ham-handed. Which one do you go with, by the way? Ham-fisted or ham-handed? Because I've heard people argue for both.
I think they're both good. I think it depends. Sometimes when I'm it's different when I'm talking or when I'm writing.
Ham-fisted is kind of like a low and slow kind of heat for me. Ham-handed is more of a delicate kind of approach to things.
No, they both mean clumsy.
For sure.
They both mean clumsy. I'm trying to think of
what.
That's a really good question
on the spectrum of clumsy, ham-fisted and ham-handed, they feel different.
I think ham-fisted is more violently clumsy.
Really, this is a question for the fats.
I would think, but that's literal.
Really, this is a question for the fats.
That would be literal. But ham-fisted to me connotes much more pounding. If your hand is balled into a fist, you're doing something harder.
Yeah.
Where ham-handed just means sloppy, but not violently sloppy.
Well, then
who
I will
cares?
Go with ham-handed.
No, I think about these things. Well, you know what show you're dealing with here? This is the English major show. Come on.
I'm going with ham-handed for Phil because he spent 20 minutes in the scorer's tent trying to figure out exactly how he was going to present his position, which he hadn't thought about apparently until he got into the scoring tent. And then managed to bungle everything on the way out.
That gets back to our conversation about the Japanese baseball team, the Nippon Ham Fighters.
There is no conversation.
Well, they
it's Nippon Ham. That's the there are the Fighters.
Okay, they are the Nippon Ham Fighters.
That's right.
We, for a long time, have been trying to figure out. It's been multiple shows over multiple years trying to determine if they are the ham fighters and that they are fighting against ham.
If only they were fighting against ham.
They're crusaded. They are the ham fighters. If there is ham, the Nippon team will show up and fight that ham. Although there's an alternative interpretation, they are ham fighters in the same sense of sword fighters. They fight wielding ham. They are ham fighters.
Two disciplines within the Nippon Ham Fighters.
Right, they're not
the ham-fisted fighters and the ham-handed fighters.
Right, exactly. Completely different.
It's like
judo versus jiu-jitsu in that regard. But the belief is that the Nippon Ham Fighters, they brandish ham as their weapon of choice.
They square off.
I would that they were
okay.
Ham fighters, but unfortunately they are the Nippon Ham fighters.
And it brings us back to the U.S. Open and Phil Mickelson's reaction to the reaction of what he did. But in the moment, you saw Beef Johnston kind of like, what are you doing? And everybody was dumbstruck.
Did you see
the broadcasters didn't know what to say.
No, no clue.
And then Beef is like looking at it. And then apparently he spilled the beans on him because he said that Mickelson told him he didn't know what the ruling was.
That's the basis of this whole, you know, re-engineering an excuse when you get to the scoring tent is his explanation, his playing partner Johnston's explanation that on the way off the green, they're laughing, they're joking around, they have no idea what the hell just happened, both of them. Because I don't think Phil, if you think for a second that his explanation of, well, I was just trying to take the advantage of the rules as best as I could, you don't, no. You don't sprint and react like that. That's not in your head as a professional golfer, and I just can't be convinced otherwise.
And it also
if I
can't
bomb this thing past the hole and it's starting to roll 19 feet down, you don't have those processes in your head when you're putting.
I started to think it through also, that if in fact, by not disqualifying him, by allowing him to just take the two-stroke penalty,
mm-hmm.
are you now incentivizing an athletic golfer to
take
right to know if that's going over here, mm-hmm. I can track this thing down. That's a miss hit. I can run underneath it and grab it. I mean, are you opening up the possibility of somebody gaming the system by choosing when to take some of these two-stroke penalties?
That's like a best ball kind of a shotgun start charity tournament thing. You know, where you have the one guy. You have the three stages, right? You have one guy who drives it off the tee, and then somebody set up in the fairway, and then they can throw it. And then when that guy throws it onto the green, the next guy has to putt it in with his foot or something like that.
That's a great idea. Yeah, I've never seen that.
That's one of the, yeah, you pay like $20 or whatever it is to partake in one of those, you know, like the each hole or three holes out of the 18 that you're playing in some best ball tournament.
Okay.
It's something weird, like closest to the green or longest drive.
Right.
So we played in one where it might have been the White Sox one, actually, to be honest with you. Somebody, you pick one guy to drive it. And then the second guy has to line up somewhere in the fairway, and then you get a throw and then a foot. And you can go foot, throw, club if you want,
Or
you get club, throw, foot, or throw, foot, club. But we decided drive off the tee. I was going to throw it onto the green.
And if it's and a White Sox one, if like Nate Jones is, I mean, I wonder how far he could throw a golf ball.
I'm pretty damn farther than I could have.
Right.
Farther, but we had, who was in our, I think it was Kittle who was driving the thing. So we had Kit just kind of drive that thing off.
Large human being. Yes.
Right down the center stripe of the fairway, and I threw it up to the, as far as I could, up to the green, and then a foot into the hole for a three. So that's how you do it there.
That's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. This is the first edition of the Cubs on Deck Luncheon Series. We're broadcasting from the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern at 3647 North Clark Street, right outside Wrigley Field. Over Lisi Gallagher Way is right out here as we overlook it. There's a lovely deck on the second floor. This is presented by AZEK Building Products, Xfinity, and the Budweiser Brick House Tavern. Vincent Goodwill will talk Bulls and the upcoming NBA draft next. Keep it here. You have the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.